Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Rick King back to the broadcast. Rick is the Executive Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Thomson Reuters, an $11 billion provider of news and information for professional markets. Rick has been with Thomson Reuters since 2000, previously serving as the Chief Operating Officer of Technology and as the Chief Technology Officer of various units of the company. Prior to joining Thomson Reuters, Rick held executive-level positions at Ceridian Employer Services and Jossens Learning, among other companies. He began his career as a teacher and as a coach. Rick is a member of the board of directors for TCF Financial Corporation, a publicly traded bank holding company, where he chairs the technology committee and sits on the audit, finance, and risk committee. Rick holds a bachelor's degree in mathematics, as well as a master's degree in education, administration, and planning, both from the University of Vermont. I recently caught up with Rick over the phone from his office in Eagan, Minnesota, and our conversation covered world-class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed recruiting and retaining talent, specifically Thomson Reuters' success with increasing the number of women across all levels of the organization. We also covered world-class IT Principle 5, external partnerships, as Rick described the symbiotic partnership he has developed that both ease and enable growth and innovation. We also discussed CIOs as strategists, his experience as a board-level CIO, with advice he has for those who wish to follow in his footsteps, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Rick King, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. Rick, I thought we would begin with your role as Chief Information Officer of Thomson Reuters. Yours, of course, is an organization that is information-based. And I thought, especially in light of the fact that data is the key ingredient in your business, how you as CIO and how your IT team adds value, perhaps in different ways than your peer organizations that are producing physical things, for instance. How do you think about IT's value contribution in an organization like Thomson Reuters?
Peter, definitely is significant because you're not the creator of a lot of technologies, maybe a few, but you're using a lot of leading technologies to do things with your data that are unique and that your customers find value in selling it to them. Our responsibility is to make sure that whole infrastructure and the innovation aspects to it are in place that allow our product people to create a product that can go after data sets and harvest unique insights out of them. And that requires not only having the data and being able to manipulate it, different kind of data sets worldwide, restrictions because of regulatory reasons, you know, all those things have to, permissions, entitlements, all those things have to be abided by, but then allowing the analytics to go after that key insight that somebody is looking for, those trends. It's right in the middle of the value proposition, IT at Thomson Reuters. We're not selling the technology, but the delivery of the content, the insights, the information comes from a strong, creative, innovative, execution-oriented technology team.
Rick, I know you have always taken great pride in building strong teams and recruiting and retaining great people, and that it dates back to your early experience, as we've talked about all in past interviews, and the fact that your first job was as a teacher and as a coach before getting into corporate America and eventually into IT. In this day and age where top technology talent is becoming even more sought after as different divisions, even beyond IT organizations, are looking for people that are technology savvy, technology experienced, what are some of the things that you've seen work well in building and keeping strong teams?
there's nothing like strong teams to attract strong players. What you really have to do in the first instance is go after really strong teams that are strong at technology and strong at delivery and make sure you have the different components that make that happen. And then be sure that every hire raises that capability, doesn't diminish that capability. And to do that is more like involving the team in the hiring situation so that they bring in the players that up their game. And then I think people stay at a place if they work with smart people, they have the good tools to use, the infrastructure works for them. They want to have at least a comfortable place to work, whatever that is. It doesn't have to be any particular kind, but a comfortable place that has some kinds of amenities. Different places have different things. And then probably as importantly as anything is the career path. What's my opportunity there? Can I progress? Can I progress by a technology track? Can I progress into a management track? What is it that I want to do? Or even into non-technology product development or innovation type of role? And I think that requires the efforts of the people that are leading the team and the management over and the executive over the group to be able to paint a vision and then have dialogues with people so you do proper career planning and succession planning. And I think those are two things that we don't do enough of for people. And I think if they are doing interesting work with interesting people at a place that's interesting to them, they'll only look up when they have a break between projects. And that's when you want to make sure they know that you know a lot about them, that there's steps for them. And in essence, you're creating a depth chart just like you do as a coach of a team. You got to know who's lined up behind who. And that's what you do a lot of times, I think, as an executive, or what you should focus on is it's all about the team. You don't get anything done without good people. So why shouldn't team building be our number one thing? Team building, team retention, all those things. Why shouldn't it be number one? I think it is number one.
That makes sense. And I'm curious, with an organization as expansive as Thomson Reuters is, does it also mean finding opportunities inside and outside of IT and giving people a degree of breadth of experience in addition to depth of experience, especially if a talented person has a talented person above them, say?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that that's going to end up being the most beneficial person in the long run. Somebody who's done the zigzag. The corporate ladder is really the net that you would go from a small boat onto a big boat. And it's got a lot of ways you can go. You can go left, you can go right, you go up. Sometimes you got to go down to go up. And that's what people miss track of in this kind of planning. When you talk to people, they get to understand that. And I think in a bigger organization, you have more opportunity for people to move into different things that hone a more general expertise, including out of technology. I ran a manufacturing piece of we made boards and PCs, believe it or not, back in the day. I've run customer service, those kinds of functions that you don't always run when you're running IT. But those kinds of things help you with IT because those are end up being your customers a lot of times. So I think the broader exposure and experience really helps people going forward. I can't say enough about how much I think that this job is a lot like that first job that you called out, Peter, like a teacher and a coach. I feel like a coach every day where I'm looking at talent, looking at the places we need more, looking at how you move the talent around and how you get the best optimal performance out of your team.
And speaking at least portions of your team, I know you're very passionate about developing strong women in technology as well. There's been an awful lot written for very good reason about the paucity of female talent in technology fields. I'd be curious to understand some of the methods that you've used to attract as well as to kind of grow a bench, so to speak, of strong technologists who happen also to be women.
First, I don't want to take credit for this. I'll tell you what I think I did when we get further into the question. But we have a strong group of women who needed a sponsor to make a bunch of programs work, that the programs and the right kind of environment have made a difference in our numbers. We've gone from when we started, and it will be 8 years ago. We've done this program for 8 years that I'll tell you about. 8 years ago, we started with top to bottom technology, women in technology around 18%. Today, we're at 27%. And I'll tell you, that sounds horrible because 51% of the world is women. And so 27 sounds horrible. But when we line up all of the best technology companies in the world, the big technology companies, 27%, 28% is the best any of them can do top to bottom. And I'm talking about Google, Facebook, talking Intel, Intuit, all the big names that people would recognize. That's the top. We got a long ways to go. What they're all interested in when they look at our numbers, many of them are below us. There's one that's equal to and one that's above. But the ones that are below haven't moved much over the years. Their question to us is, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing there? And we've actually gone out as part of the Anita Borg Institute. I'm in the Gender Partnership Council. And we've brought our key women out there and told them what we've done. And we have one program that's particularly good, and it's been running for a long time. We're in the eighth cohort that we have in that group. We're up to 400 women. We're going after mid-career women. We have a program that has been adopted by ABI, actually. They hired the person that designed it for us, and they take mid-career women, use them as a group together, then they assign individual counseling and work with them, and they work over the course of 18 months, and then there's a new cohort that starts somewhere during that time, like 12 months, but then the people in the previous cohorts become guidance and counseling for the new ones, and now we've got a big cadre of them, and what we found out, measuring those groups against the control groups, is that we have measurably increased promotion rates in the groups that have been through this program. It's called Leadership One. That's the name of the program. We have increased promotion rates and we have increased retention rates in a meaningful way in both of those in the groups that have been through that program. And the reason we targeted that program is we found that we have entry numbers of people that are pretty good. And we found out that as people go toward the executive ranks, we're not reflective in the executive ranks of the number of women you would like to see. So clearly something happens when you start out with a reasonable number. You work through sort of the first level of management. You get into the next level of management, guiding toward the executive side, and you start seeing people drop out. This program is geared toward those people, the women at that point in their career and all the things that they are dealing with to help them stay in the job and keep going and look for ways to do different things that help them cope with all the demands that they have at that time. It's an extremely popular program with women. And I take no credit for the design. This is where I'll tell you what I did. I just turned to good people and said, let's do this. First time we did it localized. The next time I said, it's got to be global. So we did it via video conferencing. And that's the way they've been doing it ever since that second class started that kind of work, the second cohort. The thing that I did is I made sure it had enough money to survive every single year, and I protected it from anybody that wanted to do anything other than keep it going. I don't think that's a very brave thing to do. It's just preventing corporate ADD from happening. It's preventing people from not sticking with something that's going to have long-term payout for you. So I'll take some credit for that, but the women put this whole thing together and did a fantastic job with it.
That's great. How many cohorts have there been now? How long have you been doing this?
Been eight cohorts, about 400 people, cohorts about equal to a year, and we're going to keep going. And like I said, I think it was last year, Anita Borg Institute hired the person who designed the program, and it's now going to be done on a wider basis by them. We'll continue doing it, of course, and we're collaborating with them on some other things. And proudly enough, we were named one of the top 25 companies by the Anita Borg Institute for Women in Technology, too. And I think these are some of the reasons why.
One of the things we've talked about in the past, you buy a lot of services and products from technology vendors, and you're also a vendor back to a lot of organizations. In fact, you've developed a symbiotic relationship with some partners for going to market with them or developing opportunities to partner with them to develop something that becomes either sellable or relevant to the marketplace more generally. Can you talk a bit about how and why you've done this and reflect on some of the fruits of that labor?
We, like many of my peers, have large technology deals with, you know, large technology vendors. I call that the buy from piece. Then we naturally always try to sell to them. If we're buying from them, they should buy from us. So that's the sell to. So we got the buy from, the sell to. The third element is the go to market partnership And that's something that I want to maybe just say how we kind of explored it. So we had CEO to CEO meeting, and it was a technology company, and I'm in there and with my CEO, and we're having a good conversation. And at one point, the two CEOs had said, geez, we've got two or three areas where we could actually work on some kind of joint go-to-market effort, see if there's a there, and if there is, we could put resources on it and then do it together. Fortunately, I got to be there for that, but then be asked to kind of run that with a counterpart at the other company. And I think it's a fantastic thing. So it goes beyond that idea of buy from, sell to, where I'm actually working with our business units and squaring off with the business units of this partner organization and a counterpart for me. And we're trying to, and we have already gotten those groups together very quickly in a multitude of areas to see if there's an idea that they think on both sides is business worthy that we should put some time in and look at. And we came out of the initial meeting with, I think, three things that we thought would have some meat to them. And this would have been a year or so ago. One of them got announced at one of the sales conferences in the last couple of weeks. So came to fruition. And I think this is a really interesting area for CIOs, because when you look at CIOs, we probably have the best and the highest level relationships with a lot of the technology providers that we use, because we're a very important customer to them. Who better to sit down with them and talk about a joint go-to-market strategy? Normally, that might be shuttled off to our strategy people. It might be shuttled off to sales or maybe a business unit president or something like that. But why not the technology? Why not the CIOs? It's been exciting and interesting, and it's really helped actually cement some of the work that we do when we're running a project with their technology ourselves inside.
What an interesting example. I love the insight as to why CIOs are so well positioned for this, the kinds of relationships that they have, the value of that relationship back to these organizations, and therefore the opportunity to potentially productize some of what comes in the union of these relationships as well. Is this something you foresee kind of repeating itself? Do you see, as you look across the landscape of the various external partners that you keep, is this something that's on your roadmap to continue to investigate?
It is, Peter. I think I've got one more I'm working on, but what's interesting that came out of it is our strategy officer, who was involved and knew that what I was doing with our CEO, he's come out and assigned one of his people to generate more of these partnerships with some of our big technology buy from, sell to people. So I think it's going to take root beyond just the CIO, which is great because you don't have to run them all, but technology people can be at the table for all of these, and maybe you're the person running it from your side. But I think we're going to see from our angle, this is going to be something we're going to look to for some growth, because we believe that we have products that fit with other people's products and they have the channel and vice versa. And why not take advantage of it? It's good for both of us. So this is a way to another way to stimulate growth that I think we all might be undervaluing a bit.
Excellent. I also wanted to ask you about your having become a board level CIO. You are on the board, among other organizations. You're a director of TCF Financial, a publicly traded organization. And I know this is a big ambition for a lot of chief information officers, having spent a great deal of time with them. And you're still, although it's something that's gaining speed, still one of the relatively early members of the club of board level CIOs. I'd be curious, how did board membership become something that either was a goal of yours or began to be presented to you? And I'd also be interested in the value, not only that you have found that companies gain from bringing in a technologist like yourself, as well as the value you have derived from being on the board of a company like TCF.
Good questions, Peter. I think I'd like to start by just saying being on this bank board, a mid-sized bank, has been a fantastic experience. I guess I'm going into my third year. The chair of the board, who is one of the people recruiting me to join the board, actually said to me, after you get there and get a couple meetings under your belt, we're going to create a technology committee and we want you to chair it. So that's been a fascinating thing. We actually went out to hire a new CIO for the bank and got a fabulous guy for that. So that, you know, that's a whole interesting thing, and looking at it from a different angle than you do during the day. But there's so many intersections. What I see in most of these businesses, because I did a lot of research on the charters for like technology committees and things, there's a lot of boards, public boards, looking for business savvy CIOs to join their board, because a lot of what they do these days, you know, take a bank, the circulatory system of a bank is technology. And then you've got all kinds of stuff around compliance and regulations. And then you have another big part that we all deal with, which is information security. So they love having somebody on the board who understands that. We got people on the board who are political background, who are banking background, financial background, risk background. They didn't have a technology person until I got there, and they wanted to go totally 100 miles an hour into digital banking. Can you imagine how much the board can help a move into digital banking if you don't have that kind of expertise? It's no different than anything else, but this is a great time for CIOs to get into their networking, maybe start with some nonprofit boards, things like that, get into organizations that allow them to mix with CEOs and board chairs. That happens at a lot of nonprofits, by the way, being on the board with other board members, and then make yourself available depending on what kind of employment status you have. My company allows one of those public boards and supports you to do that, which is great. You can see that while you're working, you probably can't do any more than that. I would recommend it to people. I would think if you want to set out and do it, you can do some research and talk and search for firms have people that are looking all the time, and they'll gladly talk to you. They'll take your information. National Association of Corporate Directors also is something that can be joined, where you can put, you know, your information online where people search for certain skill sets. So I would recommend it to everybody. Bringing it back to the office, I see another CIO operate from a different level. I see another CISO operate from a different level. And I learned some practices that are pretty darn good. I bring them back into my office. And then I have to go talk to our board about the same thing. So it's sort of a full circle, an interesting one.
If a member of your team, say a report of yours or somebody a couple degrees down, to say nothing of fellow CIO or another IT executive of one sort or another, were to ask you for advice on the kinds of experiences one should gain, the kinds of skills to polish in order to be board ready, what are some of those things that come to mind, Rick?
First of all, if your own CEO, if your own CFO doesn't think you're board ready, not for your own board, but find out from your own bosses what they think you should do to be that way, because they got to end up supporting you if you're in the job. One of the people that was a sponsor for me was one of our board members. He was willing to say, you know, that here's the kind of things you should think about, and I'll help you, I'll support you as you look around for those kinds of things. So I think use your network, but if your network isn't a high enough level, if you network with CIOs, it's going to be more difficult. You've got to network with CEOs and board chairs. And I'm telling you the way to do that, the easiest way to do that is nonprofit board membership. That's the way to break in. I've got a couple of those still going. And when I look around, there's 17 Fortune 500 companies in Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'm on two nonprofit boards where there's 10 of them total. They're there.
Wow.
You work with them when you go to the board, you talk to them at the board mixers. And in that room, while you're there, you're a peer. And I asked them before I even got the board, I asked a couple that I knew the best, but not, I didn't know them until I got on those boards, but they got to see you work and stuff. I asked them if I could talk to them because I was starting to look at boards and I wanted to get their advice. And they all willingly did. It was a great help for me just trying to figure out how to go about those things. I really think you have to put yourself in a position to be with the people that are making the decisions. Now, sometimes you get to that via those headhunters, because you'll pop out, and certainly good CIOs with a good background are going to find that's going to happen because of the demand today. I think there's actually more demand than willing supply.
Very interesting. I'm also curious, you mentioned a couple of different areas that work with CISOs, identifying good practices even through your board work and how to keep the enterprise secure. Obviously, one of the challenges for any modern CIO is not only, of course, thinking about growth and thinking about innovation and continuing to expand the envelope of what technology can do for the enterprise, but also making sure that the data remains secure is always a counterbalance to that. The scale always is tipping between some risk-taking together with risk mitigation. Are there some practices as you and your team have evolved that you've come to find to be essential from a CIO's perspective?
This is such a deep area, and one that, you know, you spend a lot of energy thinking about, and it seems like you can never have enough, and the world changes on you very fast. So the only thing I really start out with is everything needs to be risk base in the last 6 months, brought in a new CISO. I'll openly say that to take it to the next level, we needed more ergs. So we got somebody out of a very strong and reputable global business, and it makes such a difference. It goes back to that earlier point in this conversation about having the very best people and allowing them to bring in the very best, and security is one of those areas. But I'd say, to me, the key is it's got to be risk-based, and then there's got to be a lot of active monitoring, because to me, that it's not possible to create a flawless defense. The best thing you could do is be able to track things and know when something's going on, and then protect the things on a risk basis where there's the most issue if there's a problem in any number of the different dimensions. And that's picking those versus others is all part of that risk analysis. And when you do that, it's not, I don't think, a CIO or a CISO decision. It's a business decision that you got to share painfully with all your colleagues around the business table so that they can share the view that you have and help make the right decisions for the business.
As you look 2 or 3 years out, Rick, what sorts of trends are particularly exciting you? What are some of the things that are starting to make their way onto your strategic roadmap as you look to the future?
Competition is tough. It now, for a long time, it's come from traditional people and non-traditional people, and it makes us stand up on our toes and work a bit harder, and it makes you really have to stand back and think about what your secret sauce is. What is it that you do really well that you want to be your expertise, your secret sauce? And what is it that is strategically important to you to be done really well, but you don't bring the secret sauce to it? And I think then focus your time and energy on the things that are the secret sauce and get really good partners to do as much of the other things, even if they're strategically important, but do them really well at scale. To me, it's sort of a mixture. If you looked at things around plan, build, run, I'd say you're going to do almost all the planning with maybe some help. You're going to do some of the building, and you're probably going to do as little of the running as you can. And where the needle points with all those things changes. If you focus on your secret sauce, for a company like us, it moves us away from things back toward plan and some of the special building areas. So that tells you what kind of talent you got to bring in and things like that. It also tells you that you've got some different plays that you can do with some of your strategic vendors. Let me give you an example. If I license database software from a vendor, and you can imagine with an information company, we have a lot of database software, and you do the licensing and you pay the maintenance and you deploy the patches and you do all that stuff and you have the hardware and all that. I would like those same vendors to run database as a service for me. By that, I mean to be able to pay them maybe a floor amount, but then pay them up and down the spectrum based on what kind of utilization we have, rather than buying the license and paying the maintenance. Whether it runs in our place or their place, don't really care. Let them run all the patching. Let them run all the operations around it. So the future to me is us moving more toward as a service. Not managed service, which I would call is more like RMS for less. You run it. I'm talking about this ability to move it to their, usually moving to their cloud, so we can take advantage of being able to move up and down the stack based on how much we use. And I think we're going to move as many contracts as we can toward that. And I think that's just going to give us some more leverage in what previously we thought of as kind of fixed operating costs. And then you wait every couple of years to try to renegotiate a better deal. But I think we're going to be looking at it a different way.
Do you think about governing those relationships differently? Has that changed as time has evolved and as the portfolio of external partners, the ecosystem that you're drawing upon grows?
My goal would be, I'm not really trying to grow the ecosystem, but you might end up doing that. What you do have, Peter, is a real difference in the kind of people you want to have in the business, because all of a sudden these kind of relationships, if they're running all that stuff and they're doing the patching, they've got certain kinds of people. And what we need to be able to do is manage and measure and negotiate. And there's a whole other set of skills that maybe we don't have enough of. So you look at that kind of skill transition and you want to make sure you're ready to do those kind of things, because they're quite different. So I think that's the kind of transition. Now, in the ideal world, I would like to actually reduce the number of overall vendors I have by doing this, but I would be in deeper with those people.
Well, Rick King, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks, Peter. Always happy to talk with you.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World-Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World-Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.